This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Welcome back, everybody, to another exciting episode of the Doxcast. I am your comical host, Richard Early, and our usual con host, Josh Trumbo, is not here today, and well, he sort of is. He's right over there, but you can't see him, so we're going to pretend he's not here. So
you see his shoulders.
That's true. I am instead joined by a full complement of Doc's casters in Darren Gregson.
Hello.
And Brad Meixner.
That's me.
And we are here on the... it's not the eve of. What's the opposite? The post-eve? What would be the after part? You know what I mean? Like you say, it's the eve of this, so it's the whatever afterwards. The morning after, should we go with that?
Yeah. Postscript.
The postscript, yeah. Of the San Diego Comic-Con for 2018. And every year we like to do this. We, you know, there's so much news that comes out of Comic-Con. And, I mean, Brad, like, I mean, it's just crazy. Like, I have a ton of notes. This is a year where I don't think there was as much news as usual, Brad, but I still have a giant list.
So yeah, it feels like a lot more small things were announced than just one big massive thing.
Yeah, Darren, it was a slightly weird San Diego or SDCC this year. Like, I don't know if that's because Marvel Studios wasn't there and they're kind of the big guys right now. We kind of like they used to be. That was like the closing would be Sunday with, you know, the trailers from Warner and from them. And Warner was there and had some trailers. But without that Marvel Studios, it did feel kind of anticlimactic. I don't know what you thought as you were going through the weekend.
Yeah, well, I think it... I mean, I had this feeling, you know, there wasn't much that was exciting me. I thought, this feels kind of boring. I think this might have been Friday or Saturday. And you messaged me and said the same thing. And I was like, yeah, so it's not just me. So there were a few highlights, but yeah, I felt like there was a bit of a letdown.
Well, Brad, I feel a little bit like here's the thing. Like, San Diego Comic-Con to some degree is like Christmas for nerds, right? Like it's sort of like, or it's our Super Bowl, maybe, is the better one. And so for 4 days, whether you're there or not there, you're pretty much eyes, you know, relatively glued to the the wherever it is you get your info from. You know, like, yep. I'm on Bleeding Cool a lot. I started following Comics Beat. There's Newsarama. There's Comics Comic Book Resources, right? So it doesn't matter which one it is, but you're kind of like every hour. You're like, oh, let's see if there was a new panel, right?
Yep. Yeah, you're trying to find out if there's anything that you, you know, need to hear about. But I was having a discussion with my friend last night about this very same thing. I felt this San Diego was underwhelming. And the closest I could get to explaining it, you know, my point, like where I was coming from, is like San Diego for a couple years felt like just this really, really juicy steak. Like you wanted steak. And like this year felt like a very mediocre buffet. Like everything's warm. It's edible, but like it's not what you want. It's not what you crave. It's just like, okay, I ate, I'm full, I'm good, you know, but it's not like having that steak or sushi that, you know,
is it a buffet? But is it one of those buffets where you'd be like, I'm going to come back here? Or is it a buffet where you're just going to like, eh, I don't know.
Yeah, like, okay, we eat at buffets, but it's like you never leave a buffet being like, that was the best meal of my life. You know, you're like, I am full. I had a lot of different things. But I don't know if I would ever say any buffet has had like, that is the best fried rice I've ever had in my life from this, you know, ex Chinese buffet.
I don't think this analogy can be topped, and this podcast is over now. Thanks, everybody.
That's just the way I feel about this. It's just like, I think it was very, there was news. I don't think there was anything shocking or riveting or
shattering, too.
But it's also, I think they're at that point where we're kind of in San Diego Comic-Con fatigue.
Yeah,
it's like this.
That's what I think. Yeah.
Like, how many television shows did we talk about? And there's no way, even the three of us each taking a different chunk, can watch all of them.
No. Well, we've hit a... It's not just San Diego that's like that. I mean, that's where we're at in terms of pop culture. Right?
Sure.
There is an onslaught of stuff from every direction, and it is so loud and so overwhelming that you either feel like... I used to think, I'll make my analogy is, comic customers would be like this. They would have a big list, right? They would get into money trouble, and they wouldn't drop a few books. They would drop their whole list. And I get that now more than I did before, because there is a part of me who just wants to get off the train. You know what I mean? And just be like, F it, I don't care. Like, I can't do everything. So in some ways, it makes me kind of think I don't want to do anything. And I don't know. I think that's an extreme version. But I think, Darren, that's what a lot of people are feeling is paralysis of overwhelming stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I this may not be the same for you at home. I don't know. But what do you...
Not the same, only because I try to manage that. You know, with my life, I mean, I could see when I was younger that I was doing that. But as the older I get, the less time I have. So I really do try to manage my
You're
time.
You're curating your
yes,
choices.
Yes, definitely.
Pretty much anyway.
Yeah.
But you've had to do that where you've gotten into new comic series, and then three or six issues in, you brought them back into trade. Back
that's
into
right.
The store.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's definitely. Example.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it's not just the time; it's the space as well. You know, of storing things and things. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I have, and I have to make a decision. You know, am I going to read book X that's pretty good, but not as good as the other books, and do I stop reading it? And the answer is yes, I do. So
yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I think I said this on a previous podcast, but we were in Chicago and we saw Steve Jeppy at the Diamond Retailer Breakfast give the keynote for the summit. He said, "There's still only 24 hours in the day, but look at how much stuff there is now." And I mean, that's a huge statement. You know, that he's right. You know, it's. I think about. You know, well, whatever. We're going to tangent if we go down that road. But so anyway, welcome to a DoxCast. We're going to do kind of basically what will end up probably being a two-parter where we recap a lot of stuff from San Diego. Darren, Brad, and I all just have pages of notes of some of it's minor, some of it's major. Yes, we'll get to the controversial thing, we promise. And so the next 2 weeks is going to be us just kind of taking turns, picking something out from San Diego we want to talk about, and sometimes we'll spiral into conversation, and other times we'll look at Brad like he's crazy, and we don't care about
that. We do that anyway. But you know.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So if you want to follow the DoxCast, we release an episode every Monday morning. We record them live on Twitch and Facebook on one of our various Facebook channels. This one's actually being recorded exclusively on Facebook for our comics customers who are in our secret comics group. So if you are a comic customer watching on Twitch or finding this on iTunes, you should ask Rich or Darren about that group in the store. You can pick the podcast up on iTunes or on the Paradox website at ParadoxCNC.com. We're also on Twitter at ParadoxCNC and Instagram. I'm so proud of our Instagram account. I can't even
you should
tell
be.
You, so. I've single-handedly got about 250 followers for that account so far. Woo, boy. All right. Where do we begin? Darren, we're going to start alphabetically. That's not even right. We're going to start.
Wait a minute.
We're going to start right to left.
Yeah, it's not even with our last name, is it?
No, not at all. So.
Okay.
Middle names?
John.
Christopher.
Stephen.
Middle names. Okay. I'm going to go by middle name.
Okay.
All right.
So I think the highlight for me, the one thing that stood out, and it was strange that it did stand out in some ways, is the announcement that IDW had. They're going to do a 5-issue GoBots miniseries, which is like a property from the 80s, much like Transformers. I think it's slightly before Transformers, but the same similar kind of principle. IDW are in the process of kind of ending their current Transformers universe, and I'm really into that. And I think I was hoping that they might announce what they're going to do next with Transformers, but they didn't. All I know is that there's going to be something coming in 2019. But this GoBot series, I think just for the novelty of it, I was super excited. So, yeah, IDW GoBots, I think it's 5 issues. So there you go.
And a couple things along those lines. Who's the Optimus Prime of the GoBots? Like, is there a main character?
I don't know. Sorry.
When I was a kid – You know how your grandparents don't understand your nerdy hobbies?
Yes. Yes.
Like, my grandma was convinced she bought me a Transformer, and it was the GoBot Space Shuttle guy. Like, I have no idea what his name
no.
is, right? But it was definitely the GoBot Space Shuttle guy, right?
Okay.
So, but you don't want to tell grandma that
yep.
you didn't
no.
buy a Transformer.
She tried.
Yeah. So, were you, did, you're a big Transformers guy. Did the GoBots do anything for you?
I have some of the GoBots.
Awesome.
I do think that some of their toy designs rivaled the Transformers. I don't think I've ever seen, well, other than on YouTube, more than 5 minutes of the show. So I could not tell you, you know, I described one of the characters to Darren that I know that I have, and he knew exactly what the guy's name was, and I was like, that's very impressive, Darren.
Yeah, there's not many I know, but it's Psykill. He was in the all the, every cartoon I saw, he was in there. So
yeah,
I think
like, what was he? Megatron.
He was a motorcycle. Yeah, he was a motorcycle. He was like Megatron. Yeah, he was the leader.
The jet that kind of looked like Starscream was the leader of the good guys.
Yeah, maybe.
All gray.
Maybe.
So yeah. The other thing, you just mentioned that they're wrapping up their Transformers universe. So like,
yeah.
We usually don't put Transformers comics on the shelf, but we put the first issue of the Unicron event on the shelf. And we sold some. I was very happy.
Yeah, I think we only have two or three copies left. So.
And I read it, like, and Brad will tell you I'm not the world's biggest Transformers fan, but like the one thing that kind of blew my mind, Marvel has the recap page. So yeah. The first page of this, maybe they always do this, but
they do. Yeah.
It was a gigantic, like, 40 paragraph history of from the first cartoon, you know, scene all the way up to the present. I'm like, what am I reading? You know, but I enjoyed it. I mean, I did. I actually enjoyed the comic.
Okay.
I mean, I think Unicron is cool. I thought the movie, you know, 86. Is that right?
Yep, 86. Yeah.
You know, I mean, of course, I think that's cool. I'm not heartless. Come on,
man. It's Orson Welles.
Yeah. But the one thing that threw me off is it's the Transformers Unicron event. And I know it's the IDW shared universe, but
yeah.
That was a lot of ROM for a Transformers comic. And I gave that to like my nephew to read, and he couldn't make it through the title page.
Okay, okay.
I don't blame him. But I was thinking if he read to the end, he'd be like, "Who in the crap is this?" You know?
I'm so used to ROM being there now that I didn't really register how much he was in there, and I just read the ROM versus Transformers miniseries as well. So
I read, because I bought ROM comics in the early 80s when Marvel was publishing them.
Yeah.
I had a really early issue, and then Steve Ditko drew a big chunk of it. The Dire Race were attacking Earth, and Marvel heroes were in it, and things like that. And so it's so weird to me to think about how, like, this character, because he talks about the Dire Wraiths, and it's the same name for his home planet and all that stuff, but then it's not in the Marvel universe. It's just sort of jarring when that happens. So.
Sure.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
My first tidbit is I'm jumping right into the Jodie Whittaker Doctor Who trailer. 13th Doctor is a woman for the first time ever. I mean, there's been so much. When it first happened, there was some controversy. I don't think the outrage that it maybe a few years back, you know, would have had. We're certainly not getting like a Mad Max level.
or the Finn hatred.
Exactly. So, which is good. I mean, I think the Doctor as a regenerating entity, you know, I don't see there any reason that this doesn't make sense and couldn't happen. We've just, the one thing is both, they had a teaser trailer during the soccer finals, and then they had this teaser or this trailer, which was still not a lot more than a teaser. I don't know if you watched it or not, but
the soccer one was the delivery of pizza,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
And then this new one is like, I need some friends.
Yep. I need new friends. I mean, the thing that I thought this one did really well is gave you a sense that something new was happening. She goes out of her way to mention new planets and new friends, and you know what I mean? I think they're acknowledging, and they've changed creative teams. They have a new showrunner, but I think they're sort of acknowledging, one, yeah, we've regurgitated the same stuff maybe a little too long, and two, this is a fresh start. This would be a perfect opportunity if you've never watched Doctor Who, or if you left over the last Doctor or whatever. Like, this is a great place to begin. So, and I liked that they went. I mean, that's what I liked about it. I just liked that they really were emphasizing the idea of the new. You know, it's a fresh start, and there you go. So I'm intrigued. I'm excited. I wanna see this thing. So. Yeah. You don't watch Doctor Who. You do, but you're usually a season behind.
Yes.
I would watch it if I had better access to it.
Sure.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, maybe with Jodie Whittaker and Amy, and we can get everybody on board.
And
we're trying to get Jen on board.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Speaking of Amy and Doctor Who, I mean, I know whenever I talk about Doctor Who, the new series, she has not, she doesn't really have much interest because I think she thinks of the older, the 70s, the Tom Baker, which I always enjoyed, but, yeah. You know, she has that stigma. And I think, but when they announced Jodie Whittaker, she showed a little bit of interest. So I think there might be a point that where we can jump on if we can get, we can get that on the TV, you yeah. know. So that, yeah. I'm looking forward to, you know, maybe watching it with Amy. That'd be cool.
Yep. Yeah, if we, just like with Matt Smith, I mean, I like Matt Smith, I like David Tennant better, you know, but Matt Smith brought a new audience with him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if Jodie Whittaker does that, great. Let's sell more comics. I mean, we're going to take a chance on the first issue of the comic,
yeah.
which we haven't done for a Doctor Who comic yeah. ever. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a chance to get some new people in, even if it wasn't a woman. But I think they're really taking advantage of that it is and really trying to make it something fresh. So, all right, Brad, you're up.
This might encompass way more than one thing, but I'm going to go with DC's streaming service, which will be the home of Titans yep. exclusively. Yep. How in the world they think they are going to be competitive with Netflix when they're like, you know, those times late at night when you just want to watch Superman 4. You're like, what is your content? And how do you think it justifies $8 a month? That is where I'm lost. I have Netflix. I have Amazon Prime. I have resisted the urge to get Hulu. And Hulu has exclusive things that I don't have access to. But I don't see how DC, anybody at DC thought this was a good idea, personally.
So let's compare to the Disney streaming service, right? Disney is basically spending billions of dollars to get the Fox library, so yes. that when they go online, they have a huge library of
They'll
material.
Own half of all American media, probably.
Yeah, yes. Disney is going online with, like, I read the Screen Rant article. They have Superman the Motion Picture, Superman 2, Superman 3, Superman 4, Superman Returns, and I think Man of Steel. They don't even have the Nolan Batman movies. They have all the Joel Schumacher Batman movies.
Sure.
And then they're going to have, like, they're dropping 10 episodes of Titans right away or whatever, yep. you know. And then, but then the other thing that they've added is comic content. Which in a way is, again, weird because, you know, as a store who sells graphic novels, if they put the Watchmen thing on there and people can get the free trial or $7.99 a month or whatever, you know, yep. it's yet another way to get cheap access to the graphic novels mm-hmm. they're trying to sell. You know,
yeah.
and they said they're going to curate it. It's not going to be all content. It's going to be like probably not going to be new comics. You know, yep. but
well, Watchmen isn't new.
Yeah. so, but
yeah, I'm stuck in. Like, I get what they're trying to do. I think it's cool. I don't think the money they want out of it is there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'm still incredibly bitter because Titans will not have Cyborg, and to me, he's... Well, number one, they're not doing the original sidekicks form, the Titans, the young ones, you know, all just needing a place to vent away from their mentors. They're doing, you know, random characters that are the second iteration of the Titans, the ones I'm way more familiar with, but I still think Cyborg is such an integral part of that makeup of the team, and they're just like, nope, you don't get that. And then we're going to run into another problem where it's like, who is the Titans' main nemesis? I think it's their Deadpool knockoff. Wait, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's like, they can't use that.
Mm-hmm.
How many times, I have friends that watch Arrow, and they've told me multiple times they can't refer to him as Deathstroke anymore. It's just Slade, because Deathstroke is now on the cinematic universe. And it's like, so they can't even have their nemesis, if that's what they're building to. I'm not saying that's what they're going for in 10, you know, you got to introduce us to four new characters for sure that I've seen that have no presence on the DC extended universe.
Well, what's going to make them? So yeah, actually, the Titans trailer was my next thing. So that ties in perfectly. Anyway,
yeah. Well, but I mean, that's their big thing. It's like, you should get this because this is exclusive.
Well, and it's going to be Titans, and it's going to be a Swamp Thing show. And now the one that I'm actually interested in is Geoff Johns is executive producing and writing a Stargirl series.
Yeah,
like, that's the one I want to watch. So I loved Stars and Stripes. I loved Starkgirl in the JSA. I mean, I just always loved that character. And I mean, it's one of those comic characters where for like at least 10 years now, they've had no idea what to do with her, you know. But but the Titans trailer itself, you're kind of alluding to. I mean, you watched it. What did you, I mean, what was your takeaway? Was it enough to be like, oh, I would consider signing up for this service, or?
No. You know, their catch line that everybody put in their title of their article is just like, I don't know, the edgy for edgy's sake?
Robin's line.
Like, Robin's only line? Like, yeah. Okay. It's like, I think your take on Raven is kind of interesting. If you're going from the point of this girl does not know her true parentage, she doesn't know what her powers are coming from. You know, and she's like, kind of like a mutant discovering them for the first time and just freaking out. Like, what is this?
And if people don't know, great. That could be the character that intrigues them and surprises them as time goes along.
And then we just have random shots of Corey and Garth. And it'd be like, did they even do a shapeshift for Garth? Did he turn into an animal? Or did he like leap like he was going to shift and then we didn't get the payoff? It's like, these are the simple things that even if it's not in the show, show me Garth turning into a green elephant. You know? Or maybe that elephants aren't grim and gritty enough. He's going to have to turn into, like, a pigeon or...
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, this is one of my problems with, you know, like, with comic companies and DC sometimes where, you know, DC has got... I mean, the stable of characters that DC has are just amazing, you know? Yeah. Like, Beast Boy is a fantastic character, you know? Like, a lot of the characters in the Titans are, but... We just never get there. And like one of the things I thought about the trailer, I mean, yeah, the Robin line, if you don't know, is like he says, you know, F Batman, you know, F star hockey puck Batman, and it's like, oh boy, you know. And first of all, it's not Damian, right? Isn't it Tim Drake?
If it's not Tim, I mean,
or is it Damian? I mean, if it's Damian,
I don't think it's Damian. Wouldn't this be Dick? I think this has to be Dick Grayson. I think it has to be. Tim Drake does make sense, but there's no way it's Damian. I get that.
Sure.
But, like, to me, this has to be more Dick Grayson than Tim Drake. But
the whole thing just feels like another bad Zack Snyder movie I don't want to watch.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't.
Yeah, this is super dark.
I didn't want to watch Superman Batman. I didn't want to watch Justice League. Like, I did, but, you know, I didn't want to. Right? And now this, I probably will end up watching this. Like, I probably will get this service at some point. I might do the thing that a lot of us do where, you know, we wait till the season's over and then we get it for a month or try to watch it in the free trial time. Yeah. Whatever. I am not endorsing reading comics by not buying them, just for the record. But anyway. I'm too much of a DC nut. Like, it took till this season for me to decide I wasn't going to watch Arrow anymore. I waited through six goddamn seasons of that depressing, you know, everybody's miserable show, you know, and I finally...
starts out season 7 in prison.
He does. He admitted he was Green Arrow and he's in prison and... Yeah.
All because he didn't sign the Sokovia Accords.
Did you watch Titans trailer?
No, I didn't.
Yeah,
no.
You're fine. You're, you know, we had a couple of comic customers, Troy Osgarden, and they were talking about whether they would get the service and things like that. I mean, yeah, I think the general tone of conversation around the country and the internet is kind of negative towards the attitude of the Titans and especially. People love Young Justice.
Yes.
And I mean, spoiler, that's another thing we can talk about. Well, let's just do that at the same time. I mean, there was a trailer for the new Young Justice season, you know?
Which is exclusive to that.
And I love the first two seasons of Young Justice. You know, I think they're awesome. I don't know if you've watched them.
I have not gotten around to them because I don't know where to find them.
No, they're great. Well, yeah, I don't know if they're available right now or not. I watched them, you know, back in the day, you know, or whatever. But, I mean, those were great. And that was the spirit of what we wanted. And the Titans is exactly the opposite of that. I thought the Young Justice trailer was also kind of dark in tone, especially compared to that show. I guess part of it I felt like as they were trying to explain like the absence, you know, the passage of time since the old series. I don't even know if you watched it, if you'd never watched the show.
I've seen clips. I've never seen a full episode.
Sure. So, but you know, it was fun to see the trailer, being a fan of the original show and knowing that's a show that I do want to take a chance on. So.
Do you think they're taking chances going darker with that stuff because they know it's a paid service. Therefore, 14-year-olds shouldn't be accessing this.
I don't know. I think that somebody at Warner Brothers still thinks that that's what sells tickets.
Yeah.
They made $1 billion on 3 Batman movies in a row, and they can't figure out that it wasn't because they were dark. It was because they were good. You know, they can't get it through their heads, you know? I know, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, like, I get you.
You know, these execs, I think, just get convinced on what something is, and they ride Zack Snyder. They're just, you know, this is our boy. I mean, I know he's not right now,
yeah,
but
he stepped away.
But I still think, and a lot has been going on at DC. You know, Geoff Johns is president. Geoff Johns isn't president. You know what I mean? Like, there have been so many hands changed that I feel like direction is a big, and maybe that's the thing. Gotham's on Fox. Their main 4 shows are all on the CW. I assume as soon as possible they'll yank even new episodes from there.
How long is their contract with Netflix?
As soon as that's over, that'll
ends. They get the
7 Netflix, days later.
Netflix gets the whole season. So
which I've enjoyed, because I watched Flash in 10 days, you know, and it was awesome because now I'm done with it. So
couldn't speed through Flash any quicker.
Nice. I don't have to wait and worry about the next episode. But you know, their movies are all over their map. Their shows are on 14 different networks,
yes.
And now they've got the streaming service. So it just feels like a company that can't get out of its own way with all these fantastic characters that it's got.
Yeah.
So
one saving grace, not saying this is redeeming the service in any way, shape, or form for me, but one of their announcements for my complete nostalgia was the fact that they were going to have high def episodes of the entire Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, yep.
And yeah. It's just like, I heard that and I'm like, oh my god, I might pay for this just because I love that. And then at the end of the con, they're like, and we're going to put it out on Blu-ray. And I'm like, yep, well, not getting that service now.
I'll just buy
that
those.
Blu-ray
yeah.
set. It's like, even if I never watch them, it's just something I will never mind having sitting in my house for those rainy days. You know, I will watch an entire season of the animated series again because that was such a good show.
Yep. It still is. I've watched them a few years ago. We were doing an episode, I don't know, it was like for a Batman day, so Brian and I, and maybe you, we were going to do like our top 10 favorite Batman stories
sure. In
any medium. And so yep. We watched some Batman animated series episodes, and I was just like, yeah, I mean, this is as good as day one, you know, like the show's great. So, Darren, you're up. What do you got?
Well, the next announcement, which wasn't really an announcement, but I'll explain what I mean by that. One of my favorite artists is Mark Silvestri. He was a Marvel onto, and he's an Image founder as well now. And I follow him on Twitter, and for the past few years, he's been teasing some project that he's working on, just giving you little snippets of like pages that he's working on. And we all know it's Batman. It's just no one's confirmed it. Not until San Diego, and it was finally confirmed with Mark on the panel that it's a Batman project. It's called Batman. I think the working title is Batman Deadly Duo. Now, the only thing that annoyed me about this was I was, you know, great they finally announced it, but there's no release date, so I'm still none the wiser when it's coming out. So, you know, it could be years again till it finally is finished. The only thing I will say, and no disrespect to Mark Silvestri, he's probably not the best writer, and he's actually writing it, mm-hmm. I believe. So it's going to look gorgeous, and I'm definitely going to get it, but I'm just not sure whether it's going to be a very good story. But the artwork looks amazing. So, yeah, that was my next.
Did they announce if it is going to be a miniseries or a graphic novel?
Three prestige image issues, I think, is what it
probably black label or not.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would be surprised just because how do I put this? Because of the writing not being as good in my head, it's still going to be that Image 90s Image quality writing. It's probably going to be a little bit better. I shouldn't say that, but you know, I feel like, you know, I don't think it's
that with Verses. And yeah, it fell flat
yeah,
on its face.
Yeah,
but yeah.
But yeah, gorgeous book. I don't know how it's going to sell. I don't know whether, you know, the story. I mean, he might surprise me and it might be fantastic, the story. But yeah, definitely getting it for the artwork. And I just want a release date now.
If he actually draws it, the book will be beautiful.
It is.
It will sell. Like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like on the art alone.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
What does he do? Do you have any idea?
Do you mean is his day job? Well, he owns Top Cow, sure. So he must be, you know.
He's on the board.
Yeah, he is. He's an image founder as well.
You know, does he just sit around and do board things? I mean, does
I don't know.
Does he own a graphic design company, or does he? You know what I mean? I'm curious.
I honestly don't know. He must just, like, you know, obviously oversees Top Cow, must make some money from image.
And he must have a contract here that's like, whenever you're done with it, great.
Yeah.
Not great. I mean, that must be what it is.
I mean, and that's through the friendship with Jim Lee, who obviously was an image founder and a studio mate during the 90s. So.
Sure. Yeah. The last couple of things, wasn't there a Batman book a few years ago that he was supposed to draw and he did like one page of the thing or something like that?
I know he did a cover to Batman Black and White issue one of the recent,
okay,
the most recent Batman Black and White, he did the cover. That's sure. The only thing I can think of.
Another thing that jumped, the other thing that I think is funny about the book, there's an old Image comic from the 90s called Deadly Duo.
Isn't there, actually? Yeah.
When I saw the name Deadly Duo, I was like, well, who cares? They're bringing back Deadly Duo.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was, but no. I can just picture. I can see the logo.
I can as well. Yeah, I'm thinking, was it Mark, was it an Eric?
Eric Larson.
I think that's right. So
yeah, I had the same thought, but I forgot about that. Yeah,
but yeah. So I mean, one would assume, because I think we know it's a Joker story, so it's some sort of like Sylvester's take on a killing joke. Story.
Yeah, I think the Joker they team up, basically the Batman and the Joker, against some force that's
even darker.
Than
the Joker is.
Yeah, so we'll see. I shouldn't criticize, but I can't help feel that it's going to be a beautiful book, but we're not the story is not going to be that good. So.
No, I love that announcement. I would love to see the book just from the art, and if it's actually, you know, if it's basically like 100 pages of him over 3 books, and he actually does the whole thing,
yeah,
a great looking book.
Yes, so. I agree.
My next thing, I got my first comic thing, and my favorite writer is Grant Morrison, and my favorite thing for him to do is to do work in the DC Universe. I mean, we haven't really seen him since Multiversity, you know, but his runs on Batman and his runs on JLA and, you know, all these different things that he's done. I mean, he's taking on a character that... obviously he's written Green Lantern, but he says he's got 12-issue storyline for Green Lantern, and so I'm not quite sure. I assume he's getting a Green Lantern number one. Would be my guess. It's Grant Morrison. So
yeah, is it going to be its own miniseries or?
I'm a little unclear on all those details. Yeah. But Grant Morrison and teaming up with Liam Sharp. And I think, like, this has been one of the worst kept rumors. If you have, you know, if you follow the sites, like, we knew this team was doing a Green Lantern comic, but we officially know that they're doing a Green Lantern comic. So I just the way Morrison's mind works over magic and how warped he gets, like, here using the spectrum in that way, I think, like, and what's really fascinating, actually, is, you know, there's this idea that we've kind of moved past Grant Morrison and Alan Moore because we're in a generation of readers. I mean, most readers in our shop probably who buy weekly comics probably don't even haven't read an Alan Moore comic at this point.
No, I could say that.
But I mean, there was this point where like Morrison and Alan Moore were the opposite points of the spectrum, to each other. And one was a very Morrison's ultimately a very hopeful person, and Moore was very pull the dirt down into the comics type person. And they were both great creators. They both had a lot to say, right? But Alan Moore, you know, when Geoff Johns started playing around with this color spectrum, Alan Moore said, "Hey, I created that in an issue of Green Lantern way back when." And sure enough, that was true. Like, he introduced the idea of the spectrum, and it sat there for 20 years before Geoff Johns picked it up. But so it's kind of fascinating to me that Grant Morrison is now going to be working off an idea of Alan Moore.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But I'm excited about this. You may not be. I have no idea. But it's a book I want to read. Or you're just going to say I'll get the collected edition when it's over.
I don't know. Yeah. Like, singles don't light my fire anymore.
Sure. No, they don't have to.
But it's something to get excited for DC readers or comic readers. Yeah,
In a con that didn't have a ton of comic news. So it was my favorite piece of comic news, I think. So, Brad, what do you got?
The next thing, I guess, is the two pieces of Marvel news that stuck out to me, and both of them don't even feel like news. Uncanny X-Men's coming back, but we don't have a team and artist, but we do got a month.
Okay, and we need to talk about this.
So, and then the other one would be, like, relaunching The Vision after, I think, his definitive story was done by Tom King 2 years ago. But I have not read the lady's work. You know, I will give her a chance, but it's just, like, I don't know.
Well, she wrote, this is the woman who wrote the Mockingbird comic. I can't think of her name. She's a young.
I want to say it's Cassandra Cain, but it's really close to that because it's not Cassandra Cain.
She's a young reader novelist, and she did Mockingbird. Mockingbird got all kinds of acclaim, but nobody read it, you know. And actually, Mockingbird's really famous for two reasons, and so is she. One, she came under assault from fans on Twitter, or you know, like, I guess they're not fans if they're assaulting her, but you know, from comic readers. She was harassed on Twitter, and one of the things that jumped out about this is that no one at Marvel rushed to her defense. And this was actually pretty famous. I mean, Tom Brevoort and Axel Alonso were the chief brass at the time, and nobody stood up for her, and they got a ton of crap for that after the fact. So then the other thing about Mockingbird is they did this thing where they launched Mockingbird and they launched like Black Panther and the Crew were right around the same time. Yep. And both of those had a chance to reach a unique audience. I mean, Black Panther and the Crew is not written for Fargo, North Dakota, right? But that's okay. Like, there could be a home for a comic in the Marvel Universe that reaches audience X, Y, or Z, right? But the point was, they didn't promote either book. They just launched these titles and, like, expected the market to take care of itself, or I have no idea, and then didn't defend their writer when she came under attack, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, it was a bizarre situation.
It was. I mean, the cover, I think it had to be to issue one or two of her on the beach with her shirt, asking me about my feminist agenda.
Yep.
You know, it's very
That's iconic. The final issue, actually.
Is it? Okay.
Yep.
You know, just very iconic to me in my head. I still have not read the series. It's probably in my pile somewhere to be read. But, how do you generate new talent and want them to come back if you will not support your new talent?
Yeah, no, exactly. Yep. And this book is it's a controversial book. We're going to talk about a couple of controversial things over the podcasts here too, but you know, we're not going to take, at least I'm not going to take stands, and I'm just going to mention that, you know, this book was a real centerpiece book of people who thought that there was a diversity reason that Marvel comic sales have gone to crap. You know,
sure.
Mockingbird is kind of the this and Iceman and America are like the signature books for people who feel that way.
Sure. So
I'd say the other interesting thing about Mockingbird or about Vision, when I agree with you, like, yeah, I mean, Tom King comes along, does this definitive thing, and there you go, and now we're going to try to follow it up. I mean, it's weird, you know.
I get that you want to do something because the character is somewhat popular in the movies right now. I get that, but it's just, he's also in such an awkward place where I don't believe he's on a current Avengers team. Am I wrong about that? Is he on the newest one that just
launched? He's not on the Jason Aaron team, I don't think.
No, I don't think he is, yeah, no.
So. But yeah, I mean, you know, keeping the character out there. I don't know if you have any thoughts on this book or this property or anything. So
no.
Have you read the King one?
Only the first issue. It's on my list to read.
I read the first half. I loved it.
Yeah.
You've read the whole
thing. Yeah, I finished the Tom King stuff.
I thought 1 through 6 were great.
Yeah.
One of the things that King's book was so brilliant, like there's this voiceover going on in the first half, and it's on the last page of that issue 6, you find out who the voiceover is, and it just like, it flipped the whole book on its head, like once you find that out. You know?
Yeah.
So that's what I remember. So, Uncanny X-Men. Look, you're the longtime comic reader, you know, or X-Men fan. I mean, not comic, you know, but I firmly believe that, you know, there's all this talk of why did Marvel comic sales go to crap, right? I think the number one internal reason is that the X-Men line just didn't go well. Like, I don't want to criticize creators. I just don't want to do it, you know. But the line did not go in a place that fans wanted it to go. Maybe that's, you know, that's
sure,
the best way
sure.
to put it. The biggest thing that we saw when we lost, I mean, I'm talking, we lost basically almost 33% of our subscriber base, it was almost all X-Men fans who were dropping Marvel, you know. And then they drug other stuff down with them. But I feel like there were these 20-year-plus X-Men fans, and they all abandoned ship over the last 3 years.
Sure.
And they all said the same thing when they came in. They said, flat out, I haven't read one in 6 months. I've tried to keep up with it. I just can't, you know. So, you know, from your perspective, I don't know what you... You're not very current. I mean, have you read all the X-Men stuff the last 5 years? Nah, or are you just...
I'm halfway through some of it. I mean, and I think as they got to a point where they fractured them way too much. Like, I mean, at most points, if we count X-Force, because it's a large enough seller, and had, you know, mainstream popular characters. I mean, we're talking about like four teams running around at one time that all claim to be the X-Men. And that's where it happens. It's like, how are you interacting together? How are you supposedly living in the same mansion? How does Scott get his mutants because he believes he's following Xavier's dream properly? Storm has her own, or, you know, technically she's got the school because Wolverine's running it, you know, during Jason Aaron's stuff on that. And it's just, like, I think that's where it got to the point where it's just too many characters, too many teams. You're diluting the pool. You're not giving us, you know, a strong 6 to 7 member team that could rotate cast once in a while, but is a strong book. You're giving us 4 teams that each have maybe 3 strong characters that everybody likes, but they're weak stories.
Nope. Well, here's what I like. I like that the book isn't coming out till November. That to me very much ties into when Darren and I saw C.B. Sobolski, you know, give his talk at Chicago. I mean, he talked about how... I mean, the X-Men were his first love. That's what he cared about. So they've done a really good job of, like, making The Avengers a better book and having books like Venom come out of nowhere and things like that. And But he said, like, I just firmly believe you're going to get the best X-Men comic that you have had in 10 years. I don't know what it's going to be about. It bugs the crap out of me they didn't mention the creative team. I think that was shady. You know, that's the only thing that concerns me. Is like, have they not named one yet? Yeah. Are they saving it for D23 for their own thing? You know, like,
is this how they bring Bendis back?
Yeah. I mean, so on and so forth. But I firmly believe a good Uncanny X-Men comic is absolutely essential to readership ever getting back to where it was, you know, in the 90s, let's say, you know.
Sure.
I just think this is the most...
This is their flagship book?
Yep. It's got to be a good comic. Whatever Marvel has to do to make it good, they need to do it. And I think they can't put Dan Slott on it. They can't put Nick Spencer on it. I like Dan Slott and Nick Spencer, but they've got baggage. They've just, you know, this has got to be a home run book, you know, and I don't want it to be Charles Soule or Colin Bunn or, you know what I mean? Like, I want to look at that creative team when they announce it and just go, yeah, you know, that's what I want, you know, so.
So Tom King and Umberto Ramos.
Tom King and Frank Quitely.
Okay, yeah, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Marvel don't got that kind of money anymore.
Yeah. So, how about you? Do you have a thought on Uncanny? Like,
I'm just intrigued. Because I never really was an X-Men fan. You know, what makes Uncanny X-Men an Uncanny X-Men? You kind of touched on it, and I'm just intrigued as to, you know, exactly what that means. It can't be just the title.
But Uncanny X-Men's the original X-Men book, right?
Yeah.
And it's that Chris Claremont, for 17 years, made that book home.
Yeah.
You came back every... Like, he was so confident in his writing and his characters, you can have an issue where basically the team played softball, you know, for half the comic. You can't do that in a comic. Everybody would quit buying it immediately.
Okay,
And 500,000 plus people was the circulation on this book in the 1980s. And believe me, when I say we're going to get back, I mean, we're not going to get back to 500,000 people.
No,
I don't even mean that, you know. I mean, he was the X-Men. I read a letters column once, and it was an issue. It was right around the death of Jean Grey, in the original death of Green Jay, in Uncanny X-Men 137. And the guy wrote in, and it was his wedding day. And he wrote, and while he was waiting for the wedding, he read, you know, The Death of Jean Grey. And he said, I've always come back, you know, X-Men, this book has always been there for me. Mm. I've always, all these important things that happened to me in my life, and that's what the X-Men meant to people.
Yeah.
And I think even in the 90s when Brad discovered it, it was still that. Like, that was there, you know? Like,
yep.
The things that happened in it mattered. It was the signature book in the comic book industry. You read comics, you read X-Men. You know, it was just, it was on the cover of Wizard. It was either an Image comic or Uncanny X-Men on every cover of Wizard. Right.
That was probably very fair.
Yep.
Spider-Man appeared once in a while.
Yeah. you know, so we're going to have a Wolverine back with a Wolverine number one. We're going to have Uncanny X-Men back. And like John and I have been saving a little trick for quite a while on trying to get some Lapsed customers back. And I've been waiting for the right book. And all my instincts are that this is the right book.
Okay.
Like,
this is cool.
Going to be the thing that. And that's another thing I love about announcing that it's in November. It gives us a lot of time to think about the fact Uncanny X-Men is coming back as a store.
Yeah.
And I don't know, whatever, I've said it enough times. I just can't emphasize enough how I pray this book is great. You know, this is the book that I think has to be the hit. So there you go.
Cool.
Whatever, like, we, you know, Brad, I dovetailed, wait, you know, what's your next item?
My next item is it's something I wasn't expecting. Just to backtrack, as a young teen, I would watch like horror movies, probably because I was too young to watch them, so there was something there that, you know, made them more enticing. But I, you know, there's a sequel to the original Halloween that's been made. It's coming out in October. I'd seen the trailer already. The original trailer didn't come out at San Diego. But they had panels and they apparently showed more footage from the movie. I've been trying to find that online, but I can't find it.
You can find footage description, but
that's right. So this the original Halloween, I think, came out in 78, so it's the 40th anniversary this year. There were sequels to this movie and a remake, I think, but this movie is actually going to be the official sequel to the original movie. So they're just going to cut out all the fluff, and I'm quite excited about it. I don't know whether I'll go to the cinema to see it, because the older I get, I'm a bit of a scaredy cat, but I don't think they let you take pillows into the cinema.
Yeah, they will. People bring in blankets all the time.
Do they?
Yes.
But yeah, just the fact that, you know, it has Jamie Lee Curtis in there, John Carpenter's doing the soundtrack again, which, I, you know, the opening music to that movie.
It's the greatest horror movie ever made.
Yeah, it's just close. Yeah, so... I watched the trailer again this morning and tried to find more info. But yeah, I'm just excited about that, which is unusual because I kind of gone through that phase and it's not, you know, I don't watch those kind of movies anymore. But I think it's just because, you know, it's harking, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis is in it and, you know, it eradicates all the poor sequels. And I think it's going to be a good movie. So.
Were they able to find a new Captain Kirk mask?
It looks pretty battered. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it does. I don't know whether, like, I mean, one of my favorite characters in there was Dr. Loomis, Donald Pleasance. Obviously, he passed away, so I'm hoping that they don't bring somebody back to play him.
No,
so
there's
kid will be in it.
My understanding is there's a couple of new, psychological researchers who are, and that's what kind of maybe opens the story.
Yeah, the trailer seems to be that might be who the people that are in the trailer at the start. So yeah, there you go. So something a little bit different for me, but you know, it's as far as like movies or anything that was announced, or even though it wasn't announced, that's probably the thing that I'm most excited for.
I'm with you. I'm really excited for that movie. So I'd love nothing better if it was actually really good. I got a quickie. I'm just going to do a couple of – I mean, I'm Jeff Johns made the JSA for me, you know, and he's writing Doomsday Clock now, and he's written some of my favorite comics in the Green Lantern history with, the Sinestro Corps War and things like that. So, I love that he's not the president of entertainment anymore, you know, or whatever anymore, and now he can just write. So he's like written the Green Lantern Corps movie, and he talked about that at San Diego. And comics, he's, you know, we were gonna have a Shazam comic written by him, and we're gonna have this Three Jokers story written by him that he set up in his previous Justice League run. The only thing that's weird, and maybe it's just because Doomsday Clock is going to take so long, is like, I feel like the missing piece for so long now is the JSA, you know?
Yeah.
They just, they're there, they're little things about them in the Doomsday Clock book and things like that, but they're just not there, you know? So, but maybe the time's just still not right, so I don't know. I'm excited about all those projects. Brad?
I guess the... only because I find them to be interesting takes and how decisive they'll be, I guess I'm going to use DC's Cinematic Universe, the three trailers. I have seen nothing for the Wonder Woman 84 because they said they were only a couple weeks into filming, but they were still able to give them some footage. But we got a full Shazam and a second Aquaman trailer.
No, that's the first Aquaman trailer.
I thought we had something before that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And there was a poster the other day, but that's the first trailer.
We had some trailer before that. But that's fine. Just the two of them and how...
Yeah, it was called Justice League. It was terrible. It was not a good trailer at all, and it was 2 hours long.
That was the trailer for Aquaman. No wonder Darren doesn't want to see it.
You know, Justice League is so dumb. Like,
we're not talking about Justice League, San Diego Comic-Con.
Okay, fine.
The Aquaman, he totally seems like a surfer bro, and I don't know if I care one way or another. If that's how they want to, you know, portray the character. But the one that I found, like Shazam, stood out more to me because this seems overly comedic, which a lot of people complained about Thor Ragnarok with, was it was like so much joke and like nothing mattered. But like Shazam, if it's supposed to be in universe, is going to be their Thor Ragnarok, where it doesn't feel like this should exist in the same universe. This feels like Big, the Tom Hanks movie from the 80s, but with superpowers. He also had a couple scenes where he was testing his superpowers, and I kind of wanted to know if there was like a cheerleader just diving off of something behind him, because that's really what it felt like.
Yeah, nice.
It felt a lot like
Save Heroes. Shazam, yeah, Save the World.
Yeah, you know, when he's testing, I get that, though. Like, you don't know what your powers are. Like, what are we going to do? Well, okay, punch this thing. Well, okay, I broke it. Then let's punch something bigger. That's fine. But it's just like, the trope feels like that's been done before, especially the way they record it, where they hold up the written note in front of the camera and then do the thing.
Oh, that was absolutely whatever. Heroes. Yeah, yep.
But it's just like if Shazam is in-universe, which I assume it has to be, if we're getting a Black Adam movie at some point as well, like, this is going to be such a complete divergence, just tone-wise, from the rest of the DC universe. I wonder how much backlash it's going to get, or if this is what the movie that people will cheer because they think this is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
I kind of liked the trailer. Like, I agree with you. Like, I mean, I thought the trailer, it had like a Stranger Things vibe to it too, to me, for some reason. You know, like the kids just interacted in a Stranger Things-esque way.
Sure.
To me, sort of. And but yeah, I mean, Big is the best comparison. My understanding is it's not part of the DCU. I think that's, unless they've changed that, that's what they've said, like, all along. Like,
okay, I never read that.
Well, because forever, The Rock is supposed to be Black Adam, you know, and he doesn't even appear in it, he has nothing to do with it whatsoever, because, you know, he had to make Skyscraper instead,
yes,
apparently.
And Rampage.
And Rampage, yeah, so. But, yeah, I don't know, like, there was something, the thing that felt weird about it was, if you compare trailers, like, the Shazam trailer felt a little shoddy. I liked it, and maybe that's fine, but it felt low budget in some way.
Sure.
You know?
Like, it was filmed on someone's camera phone, right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's the aesthetic they want, is, like, these kids just doing this themselves. I don't know if that's what they
Super
want.
Like, Super 8, you know, or something like that. Like, I don't know. But it was definitely, did you watch either one of these?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No.
I was more intrigued by this one than by Aquaman, and yet the internet's kind of freaking out about Aquaman, it seems like. So on the note of Shazam, let's wrap up the first half of this podcast. So again, you're listening to the Paradox Podcast, the Doxcast, and we're doing a San Diego recap set of episodes. So we're just going to effectively take a break here and say this is the end of our first episode. I think we're at about 50 minutes. And then we will be back with part two next week.
This was the Doxcast. Hope you think it rocks, cast. Oh, look at the clocks, cast. Until next time.